Recording?
Recording.
Yeah, recording.
Okay, so this is Mom's Basement Podcast, Episode 23, or Season 2, Episode 1, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yep.
Today we are going to be talking about the second round of the Ronnie Awards.
Yep.
But before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about Season 2 and some of the changes we've been making. First thing, as a show of just how committed I am to improving the quality of this podcast, I'm going to do something that I failed to do during the first season. I am going to put my cell phone on vibrate. Just did it, guys.
Oh, there you go.
Really?
We won't have any phone call introduction.
GG. That doesn't mean no guest appearances by Rudy's parents, though.
Right. That's true.
I mean, after all, this is Mom's basement.
Right.
Yeah.
We are still living with our parents, after all.
That we are.
Yes, we are.
And we are still committed to having the least professional podcast on internet.
On internet.
We just want to make sure you actually understand what we're saying.
Right. And that was something that a few people took issue with. They said we were talking over each other. And that was primarily, I think anyway, a problem with, sorry, I'm trying to
actual play
timer here. With actual play, right.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm setting a timer for 55 minutes, which is one of the things. We're going to try to keep all of our podcasts under an hour now,
yeah,
so that it can be one single file,
yeah,
that you can download easily. Yeah. And as Rudy said, we're doing away with actual play, except for one exception. I don't really feel like people were too interested in hearing actual plays of our games.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we're not still going to be plugging our games.
Yeah.
But if you want us to do an actual play of your game, send an email to momsbasementpodcast@gmail.com and we will do an actual play of your game. But we're done doing actual plays of our game unless you request that we do one. Yeah. A lot more topical podcasts. A lot more focus, I think, hopefully, on things like the Ronnie's contests and maybe even reviewing other people's games. If you have a game you'd like us to review on air, send us an email. We'll do that too.
Yep. If anyone's listening.
If anyone is listening. I have a feeling we will get a few listeners to this one since I plan to post the link up in the Ronnie's thread.
Yeah.
And we did get listeners to the past Ronnie's podcast.
That's true.
Oh, and that's another thing. Almost all of our previous podcasts have been taken down to create server space.
Yeah.
And the only two that have been left up is the Ronnie's Round 1 one. So if you had a game in Round 1, you can still go back and listen to that. And, Brett Gillen's Cold Soldier, the actual play we did of that, is still up.
Yep.
Because he seemed to be... I was checking the stats, and it looked like he was going back and listening to it, so I didn't want to take it down and take it away from him. If you want to hear one of our previous episodes, once again, send an email to momsbasementpodcast@gmail. We'll send the audio of the old podcast out to you. Okay, anyone else have anything to say about Season 2 before we move on to talking about the Ronnies?
I think everything was covered quite nicely.
Yep, that's good.
Okay. Any preliminary early thoughts about the Ronnie Awards before we start talking about...
A lot of games about angels.
Yeah, a lot
yes.
of games about angels.
Yes.
I actually took the time to do a little math here. I have Ronnie Awards by the numbers.
Yeah.
There were two different games that involved actively deceiving one of the other players.
Oh, yeah.
Memory Quest and The Secret Lives of Serial Killers.
Yeah.
And both of which had two different rule sets, one for the deceived player and one for everyone else.
Right.
There were five different games that used D6 dice pools as their primary resolution mechanic.
And that's about one-third of them.
A little over one-third. 14 total games.
Yep.
Five of them used D6 dice pools as resolution mechanics.
Thanks.
And several of them used D6 dice pools that were very similar to the White Wolf D10 dice pools, where you get a success on one of the two or three highest numbers, either a 5 and a 6 or a 4, a 5 and a 6. 5 different games used angels or pseudo-angels. So, that was huge.
Hmm. Yeah, very big running themes there.
Yeah.
Basically, for the purpose of these Ronnie Awards, wings either meant angels, birds, or jetpacks.
Yes.
Yeah, jetpacks.
Yes. Nobody took outside the lines on this.
No, I was thinking of doing a game. My game idea, which I got lazy and never did, was to use wings and morning to do a nostalgic family road trip RPG.
Oof.
And I was going to use travel games like 20 Questions and License Plate Poker as a resolution mechanic. Hmm. And maybe someday I'll put that game into writing. It was supposed to be like, I don't know, lapsing into fantasy as a child while you're on a road trip.
Oh,
zoning out. And there was going to be a driver who served as a, sort of the DM, but also sort of as the foil for the player. And he was, like, trying to get the players back into the real world.
Oh, huh. That seems kind of cool.
And it was supposed to kind of be about, like, the tension between, like, responsible adulthood and childhood fantasy and shit. It was going to be, different.
Yeah, I couldn't come up with anything in time. I had a beginning idea when I first saw the words to try and use wings and murder in some way, like, but it would have ran along the same theme as the angel stuff, which means it probably was a good idea I didn't do it.
Yeah, wings, that sort of wings and murder one seemed to have... Actually, I didn't check how many games there were, but certainly they managed to shoehorn angels into just about every permutation of wings.
Wings,
yeah.
Wings and murder, wings and morning, wings and, oh my goodness, I've forgotten the other word. Murder, morning,
and
whispers.
Whispers, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so like last time, we're going to do top 5 lists.
Where is my list?
It's over by your computer.
Yep.
Now, last time, there actually was remarkably little overlap between our three lists.
Yeah.
There were only 3 games that appeared on 2 lists, and there were no games that appeared on all 3 lists. Mm. This time, I think it's going to be a little bit less spread out. I've looked at Rudy's list, and there's a lot of overlap between my list and Rudy's list. But why don't you start us off, Rudy?
All right, well, since we both have the same number one...
Well, we're starting with 5.
Yeah, starting with 5.
Oh, we're starting with 5.
We start with 5 and count up.
Do we have the same number 5, too?
No.
Oh, okay.
None of us do.
Oh, okay.
Mm-mm.
Well, my number 5 is Murder, which was subtitled A Game About Crows. Yeah. And I like this game basically because of the Domino's resolution system.
That was pretty cool.
I thought that was pretty fucking awesome. But I also like the way he kind of integrated the supernatural into, like, the supernatural animals thing without it feeling goofy.
Mm.
Yeah.
I guess, but,
I really liked that, too. And this game is on my list. It's a little higher on my list, so when we get there, I'll talk about how I felt about it.
Right, well, I really liked the dominoes element, though, because I thought it adds a lot of strategy and strategic awareness kind of to the game. And I'm not sure about... I'm trying to think of other mechanics I liked in this. Oh, the other thing I liked was the scraps of paper, where you sort of randomly generate things and you pull out the scraps of paper. I thought that was really brilliant.
And I liked it because not only is it just a really cool, fun mechanic, but it's so thematically appropriate.
Yeah, it's so appropriate to crows, how they pick up shit and build
trinkets,
their nests.
Yeah, right, and the crows gathering trinkets is such an integral part of gameplay that it just makes so much sense to have those little scraps that roughly turn out scraps of paper and use that as a scene structuring mechanic.
Right, yeah. And I thought the antagonist stuff was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Where you built an antagonist to keep the game sort of moving.
I thought that could have been fleshed out a little more.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't maybe all the way done.
It didn't seem like he was much of an integral focus of the game.
Yeah, but he did have the thing with, like, the fruit bats, where he gave the example of the fruit bat that, like the fruit bats are losing their nest and they're disturbing the crows and that kind of shit. And I think that could really come out in the game a lot.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah. But the one thing I also liked about it was the supernatural crows. The crows with a capital C. I thought that was a nice touch. Supernatural without, again, it being goofy. And it has a lot of, I guess, just mechanical depth there to play around with.
Yes, definitely.
And it's only like a 13-page game, but it still has an awful lot of mechanical depth.
Right. And that, not only does it have mechanical depth, but it's very well written.
It is a well written manual.
It is probably the single most well written manual that was submitted. And that really makes it a lot easier to perceive how the mechanics function and how the mechanics overlap with gameplay.
Right. Well, it's pretty much murder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Mike, what's your number 5?
My number 5 is Moral Dawn. That was definitely, that was one that just barely made it, and while Murder just missed my list, I think this is among the middling stuff that I didn't particularly like a lot, but it just barely made it to this thing.
Well, there must have been something about it that you found compelling to get in the top 5 out of 14 entries.
And you're right about that. I liked a lot the system of itself, the mechanics, where you had how each wing was doing its own different thing that you had to keep separate, and each wing had this, had basically its own stats and shit.
Yeah, I thought the wings were kind of cool.
And there was this little thing about what's right and wrong, and that's sort of what kept me from liking it more, but at the same time, that's the whole point of the game. So I get it, it just isn't my thing. But the mechanics are good enough that there's something there.
This game was very, very White Wolf. At least I felt it was.
I don't know why, I tend to lean toward more established game types, I guess I would say, right?
And that's not a bad thing, I don't think, and it provides a nice counterbalance to the wacky, goofy shit I'm into. In terms of the group here.
Right.
But it definitely has that sense of, White Wolf games always have this dichotomy that's inherent in their design, right? Humanity versus what was, becoming some kind of inhuman monster. And I felt like this had that kind of moral dichotomy too. And that, plus the fact that this was another game that used D6 dice pools, and the D6 dice pools were structured in a way that reminded me a lot of the White Wolf dice pools. This really struck me as being very White Wolf in design. Not necessarily a bad thing. I think in some ways one of the holy grails of game design, that people are always pursuing but never quite capturing, is the take the White Wolf system and make it not suck, Holy Grail.
And that's a very honorable goal, because it does kind of suck.
And also, there's so much that's tantalizing in the White Wolf design, but there's so much that's disastrously, ridiculously bad. That
I think this kind of steered away from the White Wolf, though, in that it was like, you have philosophies that define good and evil, as opposed to just, there might be good and there might be evil. It's just from your character's perspective.
Right,
in this case, there is. In fact, that had mechanical weight.
Actually, in this case, there's not good and evil, but there's right and wrong.
Yeah, there's right and wrong. Exactly, yeah. And I thought that's how it kind of steered itself away from the White Wolf.
Right.
Ghetto.
Yeah, White Wolf ghetto.
And the right and wrong isn't necessarily dependent on your character's viewpoint, but your wing's viewpoint.
Yeah. Right, exactly, yeah.
You really don't. Which makes it even more what?
Right, yeah.
But that's I kind of like that, too, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just a heads up, you really don't want to stop at a stop sign in the White Wolf ghetto.
Right, exactly. Okay.
No, but I definitely agree. There was a lot of potential with this game. My number 5 was Uncle Louie.
Ooh, Uncle Louie.
This was a game... Of all of the games that were in this round of Ronnie's, this was the one that was most immediately appealing to me. Mm. And it would have been much higher on my list if it wasn't for the fact that it felt like some key mechanical components of the game weren't really fleshed out in the text. Mm. I don't know if it was just because of the text, how the text was structured, or if things were left out for time, or just absent-mindedly omitted, but things like what exactly happens after you murder another player, or excuse me, another character.
Oh, yeah, like if you murder the duke or the...
Right.
One of the...
Or one of the heirs. What happens next? Does their card just flip over, and it's treated as if it's not there? Does everyone go up a rank?
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that.
It wasn't really spelled out, and I felt like that was pretty fundamental to the design, because presumably you're trying not only just to kill King Louis, but you want to get your heir, you know, to ascend to the throne. And if you, if someone else has already tagged, already influenced the, you know, first in line to the throne, you think the only thing you could do then would be to kill him and hope your guy was next in line. And I assume that what happens is when someone dies, everyone goes up a step. But that raises the question of whether they go up, if you're at one of the edges of the row you're on, does it all shift to the left up or to the right up? You know? And there were a lot of other small mechanical questions like that. Things I felt were omitted from the game design or obfuscated by the way the game is written. Replace any murdered character who's not a member of the royal family with a random card.
Oh, okay.
So that is there.
Yeah,
I just wanted to make sure it was there. That's why I looked
at it. A random card, now that adds another layer of confusion.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it a random card from the deck? Is it a random card from...
I'm assuming it's from the deck.
But... See, there's... And there were other the mechanics here didn't seem to totally gel, but they were really fascinating. I love the card pyramid. I love the influence concept. I love the fact that you hold your character secret and try to play games to get people to think that, oh, you know, he's actually the, you know, six of spades when you're really the five of diamonds.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's really sneaky, you know, aspect of subterfuge that's going on in this game. It just seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And the setting is just fantastic.
Yes.
I mean, it's about time we got a game about diplomatic subterfuge in the current of King Louis. You know?
Exactly.
That just seems great. Where the role-playing comes in?
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I wasn't really sure where, like, you were supposed to role-play or, like, what the role-playing actually did, where the fiction actually linked into the
mechanics.
Or... Yeah.
There is a narration section.
There is, yeah.
And it just seems like the link between what you're narrating and the to the actual mechanics of play, to what's going on in play, is a little tenuous.
Right.
And that could have been improved, probably. But nonetheless, I was just blown away by the concept of this game. And I would like to see a slightly better structured manual that really lays out in clearer terms exactly how the game functions so that I could playtest this bitch. Because I really want to playtest this game.
Yeah.
And just everything about it is intrinsically appealing to me.
Yeah, I mean, 90% of this game is based on some sort of espionage, be it one of the four categories.
Right.
But you have to get really inventive with it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There was a restriction on the marshal, it wasn't there. Like, you couldn't use it to kill the...
You could only use the marshal class to commit murder. None of the other classes could murder another card.
Right.
They could all influence, but only the clubs could murder. And I thought that was pretty cool. Although it might become really limiting in play, depending on how many...
Because then you could easily pretty much spot who's what.
And then why not focus all your attention on trying to influence the clubs, you know?
Yeah.
Why would... It seems like the other cards need stricter advantages to them.
Yeah.
Or the other card types, rather.
Oh, yeah, no, go ahead. This one?
Yeah. I wanted to read something really quick on this, because I thought I saw this. I saw something else.
Rudy, what's your number four?
My number four is Deathbird Black.
Also my number four.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
Basically, Deathbird Black, I like because of the mechanics that are so goofy and awesome that it's just like, holy shit. Like, the GM laughter mechanic, I thought was pretty awesome. But the most awesome is the large bucket or bowl that you fling your dice into whenever the murder happens.
Now, Rudy, you've actually used both of those mechanics.
I actually have used both of those mechanics in games before. And although the dice throwing mechanic was a little different in my game that I use. But I just love that idea of throw your shit into the... And the way he phrases it, he says, do your best, but don't directly aim it. So you sort of have to throw without aiming.
Right.
Well, here's the key. Ideally, you want to locate it far enough away that about 80% of the dice thrown will miss.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's supposed to be chaos.
Yeah, it is. It's supposed to be total chaos.
And I think that really makes it kind of... A fun. This was a really lighthearted type of game.
Oh, absolutely.
And that was good to see with that combination, because I didn't think that combination of words would really lead to lighthearted games. But.
See, that's interesting, because, and I was having this discussion on the forum. A lot of people were saying, you know, this game, this collection of words led immediately to this kind of dark subject matter. But my first thought was, if you take away murder, Whisper, Morning, and Wings all have very cozy, nostalgic, kind of homey connotations to me. You know, I think of Whisper and Morning, and I almost think of, like, the Waltons or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right about this game in terms of mechanics. This game was very much... It had enough mechanics for, 10 different awesome games.
It was
games.
And
that's both its greatest strength, I think, and its greatest weakness.
It was a little jumbled,
At a certain point, there are so many mechanics in this game up in the air, it'd be kind of hard to play without the manual in front of you to take it step by step. Right. And the mechanics veer so suddenly in one direction or another that you're doing one thing and it's like, oh, holy shit, we're in completely new mechanical avenue.
Another one, yeah.
But the thing is, though, and that would have been death to a game if some of the mechanics were bad.
Right.
But the beautiful thing about this game is that all, you know, all 10 or all a dozen different mechanical bits in this game are fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll talk more about this later personally, but I'll say this much. The thing that really put the icing on the cake was the Mephicopoly
set in that
manual.
Yeah, no, that was
That was the killer point.
Yeah, Mephicopoly.
Cherry.
Yeah.
High production values in this one.
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
So what was your number four, Mike?
My number four was Anathema.
Oh, Anathema.
Yes, Anathema. Basically, this is your little simple shrouds, which aren't really angels, but you're not really sure what they are, but they kind of look like them, and it's very on that part. But the setting stuff itself is what put this over the top at me for number four. It's so, set out there. You have what you need to build your character.
Right.
And have fun with that character in some way. That it's pretty much set up. Now, I don't know how many campaigns you can run with this before it starts running itself out, which is why I put this at number four. I'm not sure there's a long life on this game.
But I think that if you were really down with the material, you could definitely get a life out of this game. You could definitely get a good 20-session campaign out of it.
Yeah. Exactly. I think you could possibly do something like that. Another thing that I like is that it's semi-randomized on the character gen, which instead of having one player constantly playing the same type of character, it allows some change into it, I think.
Yeah.
At least somewhat.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I love random elements in character gen. I'm not going to lie. Which is why I've incorporated it into so many of my games. I really was digging the population control angels.
See, I like that,
yes,
too.
Yes, exactly.
Reduce the population from 9 billion to 4 billion.
4 billion?
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, the way he put that was just ingenious.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like you're really solving the problem.
It's just like, yeah.
You're just not making it worse.
There was something deeply cynical about this game that I definitely liked.
Yeah, that's definitely up my alley, too. I'm definitely somewhat of a cynic. Maybe not a hardcore one, but eh.
The mechanics, same reason that I wasn't totally digging Moral Dawn. Very White Wolf-y, I felt. And maybe it's David Ortiz, right? Devin Ortiz?
Yeah, David Oratz. Yep.
Oratz? Okay.
Yeah, Devin Oratz.
Devin Oratz, who designed this. Maybe he'll explain to me, you know, that his inspiration really wasn't White Wolf at all. But it feels very... You've got the D6 dice pool again, and you've got... you know, systemically, it feels very...
Yeah, I mean, you got... The will is HP, but you use that also as a resource for your goals, which is kind of what made it enough for me.
Yeah, there's some uniqueness in that, definitely.
You have the different dominions, too.
Right, but that's sort of character.
Sort of like the houses, exactly, in White Wolf.
Exactly. Yeah, that's...
And that, of course, was one of the Ronnie Award winners.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Along with Deathbird Black.
Yep.
Oh, and Moral Dawn, which you
Moral
also
Dawn.
Yeah, I ended up choosing three of the four.
Several winners on here.
And I already said that my number four was Deathbird Black, which we just talked about.
My number three.
We're at number three.
Volume of Secrets.
Ah.
Now, I'm basically the setting guy seated here, presently.
Yeah. Yes. And setting, narrative... Mechanics?
I think mechanics.
Yeah.
That'll get me in more than anything else.
And I'd have to say, this setting gave me such a hard-on. That basically, I didn't know what to do after reading this setting. Because I really kind of dig the unique kind of takes on angels.
Mm.
And all of these games had fairly unique takes on it. Like, we just talked about the Shrouds game.
Was this the one that not only had... This is the one that had angels and fallen angels, but also angels and demons, and also owls and ravens. And these were all different categories of the same thing.
Correct.
That was very muddled for me. That I would have liked if he had just one dichotomy there.
Well,
I felt like he was trying to heap on the Wings references so heavily.
Yeah.
I would have just liked... Okay, so they're all angels... And one group is the ravens, one group is the owls. Or just, you've got the angels and you've got the demons.
That's basically sort of what it was supposed to be.
Yeah, because the owls and the ravens had barely anything to do with it.
Right.
So either it was just different names.
They were sort of factions.
He was pawning a lot of similes.
Yeah. But the thing I love about this was the volume thing. The way he says, let me just read this. It says, imagine, if you will, that you were in a room... with 1,000 stereos. All of them are turned to a different channel, and all of them are set to a different volume. Now, he used that to... he compared that to, like, people keeping secrets. He used that... He used the metaphor of volume for people's secrets, and the angels are trying to adjust that volume. I thought that was just genius.
It sounds kind of like the cherubic sitting in their cubicles on...
Yeah, but I just thought that was just so... That just hit me right away as being, like, something that was pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Because there's always, in games with, like, where the supernatural directly influence shit...
Right.
There's always... It always seems too heavy-handed.
Right.
But in this way, I thought it was kind of really... Really... You know, like something that would happen. So I can just imagine somebody sitting there playing with the dials, like, oh, let me turn this up a little
bit. Right, right.
Let me turn this down. I don't like that. It's kind of like Dig or like Reddit or something where it's like a bunch of people see it's like, nah, turn that down.
Yeah, it gets on that kind of compulsiveness of human nature as opposed to. Because so many of these games, assume that humans are primarily moral.
Right.
And I think that's the issue with a lot of these angels and demons games.
Yeah.
But this one seems to assume, no, we're primarily compulsive, which I think is more accurate.
Yes.
Right, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, this is... That's very... I think this is more like angels that try to watch soap operas. Except all the soap operas are on at the same time. So they're trying to pick apart which one's more juicy.
And this is a game I thought that was also amazingly well written and laid out for the time given.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 14 pages and it was pretty...
The setting stuff was very well written.
Yeah.
The mechanic... text seemed kind of jumbled to me.
Yeah, I wasn't...
Same here.
And hard to...
I wasn't a real fan of the mechanics.
With, what?
Yeah, especially, like, the flight force presence, conviction, that kind of stuff. I wasn't really into that. Or the skill system. But I really have to see how that works and play to actually make a judgment on that.
So you would definitely playtest this.
I'd probably playtest this. It looks pretty simple to playtest, but this is one I would probably play.
Mm.
Also, I like the character sheet. It's a nice, neat character
sheet. I didn't see the character sheet. Oh, yeah, that's very very clean.
Yeah,
it's very simple. I like that.
And
it's
like,
going to get better.
I like the way he did factions and sort of the White Wolf, or broke away from the White Wolf sense of factions by making it actually affect play.
Well, yeah, that's true.
That's true.
That's sort of pretty cool. That's why I picked that one.
Okay.
Mr. Mike?
I got Haunted as my number 3.
Oh, good.
Oh,
I'm glad this one came up.
Yeah, this one was pretty cool.
I like this one a lot.
Yeah.
I just... The only thing that kept it from being higher here is that somehow you're not able... Even though I think it asked for 3 or more players, the other players weren't really that active.
Yeah, if you have more than 3 players, I feel like some of those players are going to get sidelined in this game.
Mm. Yeah, they end up having to side on one side or the other in this. But that's the weird thing with it. I mean, but in the same sense, you do need like 4 players, 3 or 4, because of the police side of this.
Oh, that's
right. I forgot about that, too. Yeah. But at the same time, they're also playing other NPCs when it's not policing.
Right. I feel like
which
this
is weird.
Game would be ideal with 3, maybe 4 players, with 1 player obviously playing the murderer, 1 player playing the ghost, and then 1 or 2 players playing what's essentially the GM role, which is to handle the police and handle the various different supporting characters.
Yeah, and what did make this list for me, though, is the fact that the ghost has to try and trick the murderer as much as possible.
Yes.
Without giving it away too much. Which is, love those games.
Another game where deceit is the best part of the game. You had a lot of games here
exactly.
where really nasty, tricky, pull the wool over the other player's eyes games.
Yes.
Everyone sitting at the table knows how much I love those types of games. One thing mechanically that seemed potentially dangerous for this game is the way the end game mechanics are set up. You could have a game that is basically an aborted game that dies before it really has a chance to come to life. Because it's based on D6 rolls, so you could have the police get lucky in the first interrogation scene and end the game in the first interrogation scene before something happened. Or you could have the murderer successfully dispel the ghost very early in the process, or at least like at the midway point, at which point
The ghost becomes another NPC.
Right. And it's like, what's the point of a game that's about being haunted by a ghost if you could lose the ghost, you know, 15 minutes into the game?
Yeah. I was going to bring that up myself, but that's the one thing I would fix from this. Try and eliminate some of the true randomness from this at the beginning.
Absolutely. Yeah. I say give it a stronger, maybe, like, scene structure, or make it so that the ghost stays with the game all the way through, and maybe you have different end games, different types of end games, different epilogues, but they all would trigger at the same time after, you know, an hour or 2 hours of play, or after, you know, the game has had a chance to really run its course. I would eliminate any chance for the game to just suddenly end at an anticlimactic moment.
Right.
And there is potential, if the ghost lives long enough, for a multi-session where you could have him constantly breaking out of prison.
Yeah. Or just have him be tortured by the ghost while he's in prison.
That also.
But there was definitely a lot of potential in that design. And really the only thing that kept... Well, two things kept it off my list. One was just the general quality of a lot of the games that were here. And the other was that endgame mechanic. I felt like there's a real chance this game could derail itself. But otherwise, I thought it was a really fun design.
Yeah, same here.
So
number three. This is where Murder, a game about crows, falls into my list. Rudy really mentioned a lot of what I like about this game. Getting back to the setting, it has this wonderful kind of, The Secret of Nim meets Fern Gully, like, child...
Meets Watership Down.
A child-talking animal, but dark child-talking animal movie vibe. And those movies, I don't know, I like those movies anyway, and I feel the way he executed this, by making the ravens kind of agents of the environment, you know, these sort of environmental spies that were espionage coming up once again.
Yeah, no, that was really cool.
And on top of that, though, not just making them benevolent angel, angelic figures of an environment trying to cleanse itself, but making them, you know, really fitting the raven thing by having them be their own individual kind of unique squabbling characters.
Yeah.
And also making them be very underhanded in the way that they resolve things.
Yeah.
The use of trinkets, the use of scraps of paper, the use of all of that is just pitch perfect.
Yeah.
The dominoes mechanic, as Rudy said, lots of strategic fun there.
Yeah.
And also just cool to see a game using dominoes as a mechanic.
Yeah.
Now, initially, when I thought of this game, my complaint was going to be, well, the mechanics are cool, and all the setting stuff is cool, but do they come together? Initially, I felt like you have two very cool sections of two very cool parts of a game, I guess, that don't necessarily have a clear thematic link. And then on my way over here, I almost slapped myself in the face. They said, oh, duh, dominoes. It's another trinket.
Yeah.
You know, it's another
tchotchke
or piece of paraphernalia that the
crows
might pick up off the ground.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I kind of had to remove that complaint. So I really don't have any complaints about this game. As I said, very, very well written, the manual.
I'd have to wonder if the author sort of took some sort of, like, Native American theme with this, the way they were doing it.
Yeah, there was a little of that. I mean, anything that uses kind of mythological talking animals is going to have some kind of linkage to Native American.
Yeah, you got spirits and all that.
Right. So I don't think I really have anything more to say about that. So what's your number two, Rudy?
Number two is Secret Lives of Serial Killers. So
also my number two.
And fuck anyone who has to play this game with the people who read the game in advance.
Yeah.
And are running the game for them.
Yeah.
Because, wow, this is a fucking sinister game.
It is.
But,
It's revenge game.
It's basically, if anybody hasn't read it yet, it's basically a game where you trick one player into thinking they're playing a lighthearted romantic comedy type game, and then it turns out that they're playing with a serial killer who wants to kill their character.
And who does kill their character.
And yeah. And that I just thought was pretty genius. I don't know. I'm a fan of games like that. Whether it's Jeep Forum, whether it's, you know, like Fat Man Down or something like that, or this kind of twisted type. In fact, the author even says it's based on the concepts of abusive game design and that no one should ever play it. So, yeah, I don't know. But we plan on playing this game with a friend of ours.
Who is a perpetual absentee or a gaming
player. Yeah.
And this is what he gets, I guess.
Yeah.
But you mentioned these other Jeep Forum games that use deceitful mechanics.
That
involve one player at least one player being locked out of the true game until they suddenly discover it at the end. What I really liked about The Secret Lives of Serial Killers is that it does that in a way that I think could believably work. A lot of times, these games with these, deceit mechanics, these X players know how the game is played and Y players don't type of mechanics, I feel like at some point in the game you're going to have a breaking point, or because the game doesn't clear them, explain them clearly enough, or because they're simply not ingenious enough, eventually someone's going to say, call it bullshit. They're going to say, nah, I don't buy this, something's up here. But the way this game is designed, you would never call bullshit.
Exactly.
And part of the reason you would never call bullshit is because Willow has discovered this perfect thematic juncture that exists between how we, as a culture, perceive serial killers, and this genre of quirky romantic comedy about these idealized,
idealized nut jobs.
Nut jobs, exactly. Yeah. And there are so many of those, there's so many Woody Allen movies and other movies like that. And there's always something about those movies that annoys me anyway. That I think if your movie is going to deal with mental illness, deal with it honestly. And I don't really feel like Secret Lives of Serial Killers is particularly honest in that area.
No.
I think it vacillates between the two extremes. But I think it does it for a smart reason. And a clever reason. I don't think it's as honest about having some type of relationship with someone with mental illness as, say, a movie like As Good As It Gets, which really took that conceit of the, quirky but lovable mentally ill guy and turned it on its head and said, well, it might be possible to cultivate a real relationship with someone like that, but you're going to have to deal with all the real hurdles of their mental illness. And I'd like to see a game that really engaged it on that level. Obviously, this isn't the game, but this is still an awesomely diabolical game design. And if it had... this game could have fallen short by just being satirical or just being diabolical, but it's the fact that, once again, like I said before, it finds that perfect intersection. It finds the perfect point, the perfect junction between being a satire of these quirky romantic comedies and being a really nasty, diabolical, tricky game design. It really makes it excel, I think.
I think it was pretty well said between the two of you, so I'm just going to leave it to one sentence. Best snuff film RPG ever.
That.
I think that's the right word for this.
Basically what it is.
You're number two, Mr. Mike.
My number two was The Cycle of Seasons.
Interesting.
Yes, this is one that I didn't think either of you would choose anyway. Just because it's a little Harry Potter-ish, I would say.
I don't have a problem with Harry Potter. The major reason this didn't make my list is so many rules, and I have a problem with... I don't have a problem with that. It's not like, lots of rules equals bad game design necessarily, but there was so much here mechanically, it was very hard for me to digest and intuitively understand.
See, that's I think that's the difference here. I actually understood it. I didn't think there was too much here.
Really?
Yeah, but that's the thing. I was able to read it and get it right off the bat, but that's because a lot of it is pretty well explained. Well, at least it explains what you're supposed to be doing. And another thing that I liked about this a lot was that there was a whole lot of dichotomies in this.
There certainly were.
Yeah, there's you got your age dichotomy, you got, let me make sure, you got age, you got knowledge v. war, aggression versus calmness in a way, I guess it would be. Mm. Your seasons, your sexes, among other things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, the obvious dichotomy between the witches and the knights.
Right.
And this just kind of put everything together. And it tried to make all those dichotomies fit as best as it could.
Yeah.
Which I think it fit pretty well, honestly.
Mm.
The dice mechanic system, it's somewhat a little bit odd. I'll put it this way. Yeah. But it works enough.
It used D20s, which is very odd for an indie RPG.
Yeah.
It really surprised me.
Yeah, I noticed that. It used all sorts of dice, though,
too. Yeah, it used all dice, basically, I think.
And I believe it had downgradable and upgradable dice in this as well, if I remember right.
Yes, I think so.
So, all sorts of weird things that you have to keep track of, which I can understand can be a lot for people, but it just appealed to me.
This was another throw a lot of things at the wall and see what
sticks
game, like Deathbird Black.
Mm. Yeah. This one didn't stick as much, but I will admit that. But, I mean, it even had the success system in there.
Yeah.
And the number of successes and stuff.
Actually, does this one use D20s? I thought it was just D10s, D8s, D6s, D4s.
Oh, yeah. It is
D8. What game was it that had D20s in it, then?
Oh, it was Wings of Blood.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it did, but I get a lot of things mixed up anyway.
Yeah, this one was pretty... It was all there.
Yeah.
Certainly was all there. This had a very C.S. Lewis vibe.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
That's a fair assumption there. Mm. Yeah. And another thing that I did like it is, this is the one out of all of them that actually set itself up best for, like, long sessions and long-term campaigns.
Right. That's something I like about it, too.
That's very true, yeah. Which is something that... not many of the games in the two rounds of Ronnie so far have done.
Yeah.
No.
Which makes some sense. I mean, I think personally it takes a little longer to really get a solid game design for extended play versus isolated play.
Right,
exactly. And it has to be balanced better if it's going to be multiple sessions, multiple campaigns and whatnot. And I think this hit it just well enough.
Mm.
I mean, have to try to see.
Right.
That's just my opinion on it.
Okay. Number one.
We got the same number one.
We do have the same number
they
one.
They Became Flesh.
They Became Flesh, yes.
Yep. I like this game because it takes angels. It's another game that takes angels and makes them, like, not stupid, basically.
Yeah.
Because you have... And I also like the way it separates the role of God and humanity, and those are the two gems.
Yes.
And that was really cool. And I thought this was one where you could have a lot of potential for maybe, like, three or four sessions of play.
Yeah.
And
that you'd want to start over again after
that. You would
want to
do it
that.
Again, exactly. That's the thing. And I just really like the dichotomy between, like, compassion, fraternity, and, and it's basically the link between compassion, fraternity, and remembrance.
Right.
And all the stuff.
Yeah, and having to sacrifice...
Yeah, the sacrifice.
In order to...
Yeah.
In order, if you wanted to create a new... In fact, that's eerily reminiscent of Escapist.
Yeah, exactly.
I felt like there were... I have a bad tendency of having my number one game always be, hey, this looks like a game that I designed.
Yeah, this one looked like two games you designed.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think this was the only of the five Angel games that made my list. And I thought it was the best of them personally. The dual DM thing I was really digging. I actually... If anyone still has the recorded version of the Games Workshop where I was talking about the Old Testament game that I was working on, I use the dual DM thing there. It's slightly different here because she has one for God, one for humanity, whereas I had one for God and one for Israel and had God do all the non-Tribe of Israel NPCs. She has a moral currency system, just like I had in my game,
yeah.
Although she does it very differently.
Yeah, she does.
And in a very unique, clever way, I think.
Yeah.
And she has you sacrificing from skills in order to replenish skills like
right.
Escapist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a very elegant game.
It was. It was really well put together.
A really perfect, once again, point of intersection between theme
yeah.
and mechanics.
Yeah.
You understood exactly how the mechanics complemented the theme and the, you know, the conceit or the concept of gameplay. Mm. I loved the way she uses the angelic, fantastical subject matter
yeah.
here. I feel like a lot of times someone's going to do a game about angels. They're either going to do a game that's about, you know, black and white morality, or they're going to do a game like Demon that's like black and white morality turned upside down. And this game totally skates around that, totally circumvents
yeah.
those bad decisions. What you have is a game where the fallen angels are basically, for all effects and purposes, human characters.
Yeah.
And they're deeply involved in the lives of real human characters, solving the real kinds of fucking problems that people would
right.
come to supernatural being with.
Right.
Like, you know, there's something, my son is sick, or
right.
we're having a famine, or...
Right.
It's almost like the way, you know, animists treat spirits.
Right, yeah.
And... But being so closely linked to the real human problems, and having to solve them within Shades of Grey, and also not being able to just offer simple answers to human problems.
Mm.
These are supernatural beings that don't exist to provide an easy out
mm.
for human problems.
Mm.
You know? They don't... Yeah, maybe they can heal your son, but there's a chance that's going to backfire.
Right.
And not backfire just in, oh, your son caught on fire, oh
yeah.
shit. Or, you know, one of the... In a way that's extreme or ridiculous.
Yeah.
But backfire in a way that's going to have, like, sociological consequences within
right.
the world of the setting.
Right.
One thing, speaking of the world of the setting, one thing I really would have liked to have seen more of is just more of a fleshing out of this early tribal Israel setting that she is going on here.
Oh, yeah.
Because what was there was fucking cool.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see more of this.
I was okay with this game. This got middle of the road for me, but that's because games that games that have a potential to be extremely serious, like
mm-hmm.
this one,
yeah.
don't appeal to me that much.
Mm-hmm.
But it did strike the right chord in that, because I think that was the aim
right.
here.
Yeah.
And there's also this little bit about, while you're examining your character's humanity while being a fallen angel, in
right.
quotes, humanity...
Yeah.
You might also end up examining your own, which is
that's
brilliant
true.
In and
yeah.
of itself.
Yeah.
That's true, definitely.
Or I mean, at least humanity as a whole, which is nice. You don't
yeah,
get that a lot.
You don't get that, and a lot of times games that try to do that fall flat on their face.
Right.
And this game doesn't. Like many of the White Wolf games really try to do that, but don't
yeah.
get there.
The one other thing I liked about
mm-hmm.
this is that it examines the relationship between angels.
Yeah.
And that was something that a lot of games don't really do. I don't know.
They don't. Or if they do, they do it in a very superficial, factional way.
Right, yeah, right. Exactly.
One thing, getting back to something Mike says, I think a distinction needs to be made between games that are serious and games that are serious.
Yeah,
right,
serious
right,
face
right.
mode.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
This isn't serious face mode, because that means it wouldn't even be middle of the pack for me.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think games... Or maybe... No, I can't use that word. I was going to say the difference between games that are mature and games that are serious, but
yeah,
mature
that's a
has
word.
That. Ah,
yeah.
An adult just makes you think of erotica, you know?
Yeah, it's also
erotica.
True.
I guess the difference between games that are... I don't have a single word. Games that deal with the complexities of real life in a way that isn't necessarily, you know, clutch your sides and laugh about it, versus games that deal with big, weighty things that aren't really big and weighty at all, but are just
cocks.
Ridiculous exaggeration, emotional exaggeration, which I think is a pit that White Wolf often falls into. We are running rather low on time here. Any final thoughts, any final games you want to mention before we wrap
up? My number one was Deathbird Black, but we talked the sh out of that one, so.
that was a great so game. Cool.
That was. That was perfect strokes of not serious at all in any way, which is what made it there. I think that's all I can add to it.
I would love to play test that game.
Me
love
too.
To play test that game.
That looks like a pretty tight game.
Rudy, any game that didn't get mentioned you want to mention?
Not really.
I've got one. Jet Patrol.
Air Patrol.
Air Patrol. Okay,
Jet
Air
Patrol.
Patrol.
What jetpacks?
Awesome yes. setting.
Yeah.
Undermined a little bit by very standard mechanics, but an absolutely brilliant, awesome setting. Now, a lot of times when people try to do, I don't know, this isn't exactly steampunk. This is like mustard gas punk.
Yeah.
yes.
A lot of times when people try to do this historical fantasy mix, they don't get it.
Alternate
it doesn't gel. This could not have gelled better.
Yeah.
The way that he overlaps War of the Worlds, straight out of H.G. Wells, with World War One, with Tesla, with jetpacks, with old serials, all of these things fold together not only perfectly, but perfectly in a way that actually, I think, illuminates a little more about the time period.
Yeah.
The idea that the aliens show up just in time to
end World War One,
and then they take out the mustard gas. I mean, I think that really gets at the ridiculous absurdity and horror of that war.
Yeah.
Because at near the end of that war, they might as well have been gassing aliens, you know, because things had just reached such a terrible low. But I just thought, wonderful, wonderful setting.
Yeah, the setting for that was great.
And I wish there had been more setting material in that game.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see a version of that game that takes that setting material and adds a little bit of a more unique mechanical structure to it. And really
I didn't mind the mechanics. I thought the fate, it was almost like fate system.
Yeah.
And I thought I really liked that system anyway. But I thought it was, I really did like the setting, though.
Same here. I like that setting a lot. I felt it was a little, it felt a little like Super's chess without the chess, which is why I didn't really like it that much.
Mm.
But agreed on the setting material. Just perfect.
Okay. So that, Mom's Basement Podcast, episode 23.
Season 2. Yeah.
And we'll probably be back to doing these on about a weekly basis. 1 hour podcast, topical.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if you have any suggestions, comment or email us. momsbasementpodcast@gmail.com.
Please leave comments or my mom will beat us.
Not true.
Maybe true.
Yeah,
won't beat me.
Won't beat me.
All right.
Mom's Basement.